This is The Conversation, a podcast that goes behind the scenes of the art worlds, sometimes the art worlds of secondary cities, like today. I'm Michael Shaw. Welcome to the show. It's episode 232 with Iyana Frisby and Joya Fonda, the co-founders of Art Advice, which is their Sacramento-based project, often in the form of an advice booth styled after Lucy from the Peanuts cartoons booth. Only their aim is to both serve and be served by their art community in a way that cuts through the snail-paced bureaucracy when it comes to making things happen. Now, I don't have exact stats on this, you guys, but my estimate is that roughly half of you listening live in art capitals, New York, LA, London, Berlin, etc., and half of you are not in art capitals. But I think whether you're in one or the other, you will appreciate this conversation about living in a more modest-sized city and art community, because if you're not in a non-art capital city now, you may wind up in one at some point in the future. That is to say, if you're living in LA or if you're living in New York or Berlin right now, you could be living in a smaller city that is not so art-focused. Also, I think this is a really nice step away from the capital A art world that we looked at through The Price of Everything, the documentary, last episode that was featured. And by the way, it was great to get so much feedback from that episode. I get it. It's a provocative topic, and fingers crossed, we will have future episodes with some of the people who are in that film. Stay tuned. The website for this show, meanwhile, is theconversationpod.com, where you can support the show, and you can check out the Art Advice booth at work, as well as Joya and Yana's own artworks. And while you are on the website, hey, linger for a few minutes, perusing the archive, the support page, and so on, will you? Thank you so much for that in advance. On the back end of the conversation with Yana and Joya, I've got some post-thoughts on The Price of Everything, the documentary featured in the last episode. It's a really good Weiss link. It's all one Weiss link. And I'm also going to give you a brief remembrance of the late Robert Morris, the minimalist and, frankly, maximalist artist who passed recently and whom I had as a teacher when I was at Hunter College. And one final note before we jump in here. At the start of our recording, Jan and Joya talked about their respective backgrounds and what eventually led them to Sacramento. And Joya in particular talks about her career being a nude figure model during grad school, which wound up being a fascinating conversation on a few different levels. I had to leave that whole segment out for time and consistency with this particular episode here, but I will make that segment available as a bonus episode for supporting listeners of the show. More about that on the back end. For now, let's jump into Art Advice. More on the back end. I'll talk to you then. So you guys met when you were working in this young contemporaries type program at the Crocker Art Museum, and became collaborators, run an artist-run space. And then eventually you started this ongoing project, Art Advice. And so, Yana, you want to take it from there?
Sure. So it actually came about a couple of years ago that we had kind of a state-of-the-arts meeting at a very large gallery called Beatnik. And there was about 200 people that came from the entire arts community, and just kind of like a motley crew of different types of camps coming from different places. And there was a lot of cooks in the kitchen that night. and it was like, well, what can we do to help artists? What do we need? Just like the really big questions, and like, who is this for? Where is this going? What do you, you know, like just trying to share information. And so we kind of walked away from that and then decided that we would do a smaller group. And so we met with about, I think, Joy, like 6 people or 8 people or something. And
sorry to interrupt. I was going to say that that was the beginning of your selecting people, it sounds like, right? Like you wanted to get the most thoughtful and maybe sophisticated people to become part of this smaller group?
No, people were just people, but they kept talking about more meetings and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think like the second meeting though that we went to, it was still kind of a mixture group of people that had different interests, but still we all, our common ground was art. And so we kind of met, and out of that, I think sprang the idea. I think Joy and I had been kind of toying with the idea of art advice. Like, you know, we just sometimes will think about like, what can we do? Like just as individuals to help the community. And so that's kind of how it was born. We just manifested it, and it happened so quickly too. I got some help from another group of artists to help me make the art advice booth. We wanted it to look just like the Lucy booth from the Peanuts cartoon. And I think we succeeded with that. We made it also so it's easy to take down and anyone can do it. And it's very portable. So all those things just need to fit that criteria so it could be portable and anyone could take it wherever they needed to. So we kind of worked with that. And then I think it was just me and Joya and then our friend Melanie Bowen that was really kind of doing it. And we would just go sit out on a corner during like Second Saturday, which is, you know, our art galleries are all open that night. And people would be like, what is this? You know, just kind of started getting some buzz. And then we would go to, I think we went to a high school. We went to the Crocker Art Museum. We've been to the Minetti Schrem opening in Davis. So we've been to things that are art related, art appropriate. It sometimes crosses over into education. Sometimes, like I said before, the California State Fair for two consecutive years. That was always interesting. So we've kind of been all over the place with that.
Let me set up before we continue on art advice and what that's been like. Let me set up the context in terms of where you are in Sacramento. So you guys both shared your individual, you know, very concise origin stories. So Joya, you're from the Bay Area originally, and so it's not hugely surprising that you're still roughly, I don't know if Sacramento is still considered the Bay Area, but, you know, outer Bay Area.
I was trying to get back to the Bay Area, and then I was locked out of the first.com thing. There was just, like, no vacancy, and then so I ended up in Sacramento by default,
right,
which seems to be how people end up here.
Yeah, thank you. That's exactly kind of where I was going with my question. When you each of you originally found yourselves in Sacramento, you know, what was the thinking about it? I can't get into the Bay Area, so, you know, this is the next best thing, and maybe I'll try again. Kind of, you know, what were your respective thoughts at the origin?
I just got my driver's license this year, so I really had my heart set on the Bay Area because I was familiar with it and I liked the scene there.
How have you been getting around all these years without a driver's license?
I ride a bicycle everywhere.
Wow.
But the only reason I bring that up is because LA just seemed like not a possibility for me because I don't drive. And I had a fear of driving. And so LA just seemed like no way. There's just no way. There's not enough transit. I can't do it. So I just didn't even consider LA. Now I like LA, but I didn't even consider it. But I was in the Valley and I thought, I got to get out of this area. I mean, this is not going to happen. I can't stay sane.
You mean the Central Valley, just to clarify.
Or Modesto.
You mean the Central Valley as opposed to the San Fernando Valley, just to clarify.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I cannot.
Right.
Can't do it. So,
right.
I thought Sacramento might be just like another version of Modesto. And then my mom was like, well, go check it out. And then I did. And there was enough of a liberal enclave to make me feel like I could survive.
Right. Okay. Yana, what about you?
After I was trying to get back to the Bay Area when I moved back to Sacramento, because there's just so many more opportunities there and it's so beautiful. Like I lived in Oakland and every day it was like, even in the winter, it was 70 degrees and sunny. And I was like, oh, so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so I was trying to get back there, but as Joya said, it's pretty, once you leave, it's so hard to get back into that.
Yeah.
And a lot of my support network, they just scattered as well. Like, I don't really, and it's such a changed area too. Like, I kind of sometimes get sad when I go there because it's so different. It's so different. And, you know, it's like all I have are my memories there versus like, oh, there's the place, you know, like so many things are changed. But because I have been to better places and I've also been to worse places, Sacramento is, and it's very charming and it's very navigable. And over the period of time, I have been able to, like, we've grown a community. Like, you can actually make a difference here versus, like, the anonymity of the Bay Area.
I
really like that. Like, I think we both really thrive on being proactive in the arts community.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, I'm glad you said that
and
because
it's flat
that's,
and bike friendly.
Right, yeah, and it's flat and bike friendly, yeah. But I'm glad you said that just about your sentiment about coming to appreciate it. You know, but despite both of your reservations, I guess, because in, you know, in learning about art advice and being in Sacramento and not even having thought of it until, you know, 6 months ago or less as a community, I wonder if there's a certain amount of envy from art capitals, you know, because as you said so aptly, there's a lot of anonymity. For some people, it works like butter. You know, they just fit into the scene and everything's golden and it's thriving, and, you know, and they have all their resources and all their community and so on. But it's not like that for everybody. So it's kind of appealing to imagine a navigable and accessible and not overwhelming community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's affordable too. So, I mean... We're both in really good positions where we can both afford to have studios outside of our houses.
Mm-hmm.
And I work part-time. Joy works full-time. And I still am able to sell artwork. So, you know, and I'm still participating in lots of things around town. So there's enough here to keep me busy, for sure.
Right.
My quality of life here is so much higher than it would be had I stayed in a city.
Sure.
Not in terms of intellectual stimulation, but, you know.
Well, that's a very interesting point because that's something we talked about in our prior call. You know, it was something the effect of I asked, do you feel like when you show there, you know, that it's a satisfying enough experience or something to that effect? And you said, not really, something to that effect. But it sounds like through art advice and you know, the building of your community that, I mean, to what extent has that become satisfying or become stimulating is the word that you used, and to what extent is there a lot of room for improvement? How would you describe, you know, the pros and cons, I guess, in terms of stimulation?
Joey, you want to go first?
I think I get myself in trouble all the time with these projects. I do lots of different weird projects, and I think that it's to fill the void of that. You know, like, if there's nothing going on, it makes something happen.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, my last year in New York, like, all the cool shows I went to were from artists outside of New York. Like, that was what was cool, was like, ooh, this guy's from Tennessee. This, you know, this guy's from Canada, from Ottawa, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the internet was starting to happen, and there was this idea that you didn't have to be centrally located. The internet was going to solve that. And so, like, half the people were saying, like, don't leave New York, you'll regret it. And the other half were saying, you don't need to be here, go be somewhere else and just,
right,
you know, email it in or whatever. And I think I, like, bought into that a little bit because I thought, like, I need to get the hell out of here. And they say it doesn't matter anyway. And I have all this evidence of people that are cool that are not from here. And it feels like the not being from here is the cool part. So I guess I'll leave and go be from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that now that I'm somewhere else, I have a really hard time connecting with community outside of this area or getting anyone to care. And Sacramento isn't, like, enough of a podunk place for anyone to be impressed by it. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm from Normal, Nebraska, or, you know, something that has, like, population 800. Like, this is a real interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm from a something that people think of as a sleepy sort of suburban place. And
yeah.
So that doesn't sell.
When you mentioned when you're in New York and there was this trend of these cool shows or shows that you thought were cool of these people from outside Canada, Tennessee, what have you. Do you feel like there has been and or will be the kind of curators or what have you that will come through Sacramento to discover those types of artists that will then be shown in art capitals?
It's possible. I mean, the other day, Mima brought through a lady who's a curator for the, I think the Istanbul Biennial or something like
that.
So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think because, you know, we have a lot of artists that have cool studios. So, I mean, I think that could happen. I always hold out a little hope. I go to every Whitney Biennial hoping that somebody will someday stop through Sacramento.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Why not? What have been some of the takeaways of, you know, of doing this project? What have been some of the, how has it influenced your own work? And you know, again, I guess, what have been the pros and cons to this project, you know, like with the city? Yana, you want to take this one?
Sure. I think we both get a lot of gratification out of it because we're both professors. It's just kind of in our DNA to profess.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of take that pretty seriously. And although when we're sitting at the art advice booth, we just get hit with so many different types of questions and the conversations go every which way about art. And sometimes, you know, we really get some gems in there that we, after they leave, we turn to each other. We're like, I think we just saved a soul, you know, like
mm-hmm.
some people just need to hear certain things and some people just need the right handout to get them going. Or maybe they need permission or maybe they need to be, have a little deprogramming happen to them. You know, I think everybody kind of comes to the art advice with their own set of, you know, everybody's got their own baggage or experiences, whether they be positive or negative, about how they navigate or are unable to navigate their art world, whatever that may mean to them, you know?
Right.
And I think that's really satisfying to demystify the system, you know? So I think that's really great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can give you some more food for thought because I have the art advice. I have the art advice tracker from the State Fair from this past summer, and I thought I would just read a few of the notes under the question line, and maybe also the gender and age of the person. So we've got just talked about Peanuts, male, 10 years old. I assume that's the cartoon. Wanted to know about painting, male, 19. Just curious about art classes, female, 11. Talked about Sac State, female, 24. What direction should I take this? Male, 40 plus. What is my medium? How do I something enter work? Male, 60 plus. Art classes for children. Can I be an artist now? Where can I learn basic drawing? Where can I have a painting restored? Is that what that was? Feedback on work and direction advice. And then, of course, the highlights. How do I get in this exhibit? Are unicorn Pegasuses real? Should I do art again? Just wanted to talk about art, miss drawing. How do the awards work? Those are the last ones.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys can take those in any direction that you like.
Well, I want to do the unicorn Pegasus one.
Yeah. Sure.
I think that was a young lady, and it almost felt like she was asking if the Tooth Fairy were real or something. So I think we steered her down the direction of like unicorn folklore and throughout the ages a little bit. And I told her how much I love them. And we just talked about unicorns and in the movies and in art. And I kind of left that alone. I didn't give her a yes or a no. I just, you know, I think it's really interesting too, especially this generation of younger people, they don't really differentiate between like what's real and not real. So it's real. I think that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And what about can you think of some of the more memorable exchanges you've had, whether it's from somebody who wanted to know if they should pursue art, you know, more seriously, or somebody who already start with one of the more sophisticated questioners that you had who was already an artist and maybe had some interesting questions, and then you can work your way into maybe more of the novice type questions, perhaps.
I think we get a lot of people asking, like, should I go to grad school?
Mm.
And that's a hard one, you know, because I don't think grad school is the end all be all. I'm a product of grad school and I can only do what I do because I did that. But it's a lot to take on and not everyone's cut out for it or ready for it. And, you know, I think when I was thinking about going to grad school, I had kind of mixed reviews from my professors of like whether or not I need to do that. And some weren't super enthusiastic about the idea. And I remember kind of processing that and thinking it was because my work wasn't good, but I think they were just trying to save me the trouble. And So now I feel like I have to feel someone out and give them some ideas about what that undertaking is and what the pros and cons are of different kinds of programs. Mm-hmm. And then I found another group in Oakland that created a do-it-yourself MFA program, which is like a, you know, grad school without the tuition. And I recommend that a lot for some people that are toying with the idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can self-educate.
Yeah, what does that entail, that program?
Well, I don't know them personally. I just have some of their information. But it's like find, you know, 10 to 12 other serious artists and commit to one another to meet and talk about the work. And then there's a reading list and, you know, kind of a active pursuit of seeing things and talking about them and understanding their origins. And you know, the whole enterprise, I think, of grad school is to kind of figure out how you can place yourself into the narrative of art history or how you don't fit in or how you do fit in or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, like a year ago or two, I was an instructor. I don't know what to call it. An advisor for one of these Vermont School of Fine Arts has this like low residency MFA program, which I kind of guffawed at first, you know, like how, you know, the best part of grad school is your colleagues, like the people that are around you.
Yeah.
What is this work at home distance education thing? But then, you know, I was invited to advise someone and I met with her every few weeks. And then I ended up like, they didn't expect me to, but I used my stipend from the school to fly out and go see their graduate show just because I wanted to see like, what is this campus and what kind of work does a program like this produce?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's the whole Harold Fletcher idea of like maybe not getting grad student studios so that they can have the real world experience of figuring out how to make art with or without a studio.
Mm-hmm.
So I see validity like on all sides of this. Like I love the idea of grad school and taking 2 years to really hone your practice and you know, have that kind of intense period where you're working, you know, and with other people that are taking their own work seriously. That's really, that kind of moves things light years ahead. Like I can see it now with people who haven't been, that they just haven't done a deep dive in their own stuff usually.
Mm-hmm.
Not all, but then two of the most successful artists I know are people who never had a formal art education. So I know it's not necessary.
Are those artists in Sacramento the ones you're referring to?
Selling that to people.
Are those successful artists you're referring to in Sacramento?
Yeah. Yeah.
So how did they educate themselves? Because when you talked about that Oakland do-it-yourself MFA, getting 10 or 15 people together, that's extremely challenging. I hope everybody listening to this agrees, to not be in grad school and to get 10 or 15 colleagues of similar level together to have ongoing studio visit exchanges and conversations. That's like a pipe dream.
Mm-hmm.
Without
not
school.
And it's easier than paying back $100,000 in student loans.
Okay, that's an interesting argument. that's an interesting argument. Yeah, I suppose you could take $50,000 of that $100,000 and just start hiring people to be your colleagues, you know, your fellow students.
I've even told people just drop out. Just like save up your money, save up as much money as possible, and then drop out for 2 years and just work.
Mm-hmm.
That's grad school.
But if you don't have any guiding, you know, mentor or what have you, I mean, that's the thing.
You can't be in a vacuum. You've got to find mentors. You've got to have dialogue. You've got to go see stuff. You've got to read stuff.
Right.
And so, those artists that I'm talking about, they did that work.
Yeah.
Do you think they
knew to do that instinctually? Or did they have a mentor already in hand?
They both figured it out pretty much. One of them had a mentor, and then the other one just is really, really street smart and just reads people and figures stuff out.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that these two people, too, one of their advantages is they don't know the right way to do it, and so they just do it.
Right. Yeah, they don't have
and that is so, and that makes them stand out.
They don't have the etiquette limiting them.
They don't have the grad school stink on them.
Right. I was going to say they don't have the traditional etiquette limiting them. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. So, but how do you get away with doing it that sort of direct way? I mean, that can really put a lot of people off. Like if you go, you know, if people, the tradition in, you know, in art centers, if not in even Sacramento, is if you solicit people, like if a gallery, you know, like you go to an opening and you go up to the, you know, you go up to the gallerist and you go, hey, could I get a studio visit with you? You know, they go, fuck you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know how this works elsewhere.
One of the people that she's speaking about, first of all, in Sacramento, like everybody kind of knows each other. And so, we have all taken turns like working on jury panels for like the Sacramento Metropolitan Arts Commission. They usually have like artists. There's a couple of artists that are on the panel when we look at like public art submissions. And these public art submissions are coming from all over the world. And then one person, the local person that Joy and I are referring to, she submitted for the project that I was on the panel for. And, you know, it was really interesting to hear the dialogue about her and her ideas and stuff. And it was like, this is really interesting. She doesn't have a lot of experience. How about if we'll go back to her and let her know, like, this is what, you know, submit this for the next time. Look at your budget a little bit differently. So this person got coaching. It wasn't like a no, fuck you. It was like, let's go back to her and like give her coaching. Like, what does she need in order to get to that next step? And so there, this support system here, I was just really impressed by that, that was even, you know, on the table. Like I never got that kind of love, from
a
committee,
only
you know,
after so many people complained that the public art commissions weren't going to local artists. So the city had incentive to highlight someone local.
Right.
Yeah. Right. We had a Jeff Koons sculpture show up here for like $8.5 million, and it was quite the hullabaloo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think like, you know, with her, now she is seasoned. Like she has some of those public art commissions under her belt.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's gotten to that next step. And so she's definitely one of our success stories here in Sacramento. And she, you know, she was a little skater punk. Now she's an older skater punk, but she's making money and she's doing awesome. I'm so proud of her.
So who was it?
Kind of amazing to watch that grow.
Who was it that then was there a specific person or group of people that mentored her or, you know, parented her? That you were talking about?
Yeah. A good arts administrator. Yeah, you need a solid arts administrator that is advocating for the artist that gets it.
Mm-hmm.
Which one?
Shelley Willis.
who is that?
Yeah. Her name is Shelley Willis.
But what is her position?
She was the director of the Sacramento Metropolitan Arts Commission, SMAC.
I see. Okay, got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you guys, as part of your art advice program, have a number of handouts. And certainly the most resonant one that I found is the one about rejection. And it's titled A Few Words of Encouragement with Regards to Navigating Rejection. You guys didn't write this, I take it, right? But you you got it from Arthur Gonzalez, the artist Arthur Gonzalez, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote the handout, and then I referred to the book.
Oh, got it.
Wrote
okay,
for.
So you actually wrote this, Joya. So talk about putting this together, and maybe just, you know, we don't have to read the whole thing, but maybe you can sort of sum it up, how it works.
I think that sometimes I see people in this community, again, because they don't have this formal art education, really taking rejection hard. And sometimes to the extent that they feel discouraged and they don't put their work out there again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the wonderful things that art education has given me, is the ability to receive criticism and bounce back from it and give it and take it and value it. And I was just seeing that there was just like a lot of softballs being lobbed around here, and it wasn't doing the work any favors, and people taking criticism way too personally, and people just needing perspective on that, and to talk about that it's just normal. It's just a normal thing, and you got to put more hooks in the water than you know what to do with. And it's not groundbreaking or new advice. I mean, it's the whole, you know, perspiration, inspiration ratio. You just have to keep putting it out there. And if you're not hearing no, it's you're just not trying.
Right.
Like no is the symbol that you're trying.
Right.
And I think that it'll do our scene a lot better as soon as people can like get over that.
I don't think you're giving the sentiment enough credit, because it's not something that just is applicable to small art communities. It's applicable to all of us. And I feel like, as not new as you said it is, it's still something that's actually, from my experience, maybe you can tell me differently, but it's not something that's specifically taught. You know, you just go through the criticism, you know, and you, even if you're not a thick-skinned person generally, you learn to maybe gradually, slowly over time, have a little bit thicker skin when it comes to receiving criticism about your work.
Yeah.
But there's nobody who's telling you like the words that you wrote, you know, how you process it.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, like, that's the part of grad school I don't want people to pay $100,000 for.
Right.
I mean, people crying and critiques, like, it was awful. And I want to help people be open to it, but to learn how to roll with it a little bit better. And someone should teach people how to deal with it.
Yeah.
And
do you?
One of those parts of our community, as the bigger art community or the art world or whatever, like there's some moves that we've made over the years. Like I get gatekeeping and curating and, you know, that's fine. I get it. But at the same time, like we made this bed and now we have to lay in it. And I feel like this is evil, bad critiques that leave people kind of out in the cold and not understanding what to do with that information. That's something that doesn't cost any money to fix. And it's not to say that we need to do away with criticism, because that's wonderful, but we need to help people understand its purpose and how to give it and how to take it and how to ignore it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, certainly a lot of professors at some of these $100,000 schools don't really know don't have their own education and how to properly give criticism. But you are a teacher, so are you giving specific, do you aim either to the class as a whole or to students individually to tell them what being a recipient of criticism and as well as what a recipient of rejection out in the world, you know, how you navigate those things?
Yeah. Yeah, I give them that handout. I mean, there's a competition each year, a student art show.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first came to the school, like no one was getting rejected. And it was just the worst. It looked like a thrift store in there and it was bad. And I just made it a mission to like clean it up a little bit and not accept so much work and let people sit with rejection. But I also put that handout out right away to all the people that are rejected so that they can kind of give themselves credit for even putting their hat in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's helping, you know, to like, they appreciate it and they get it. And then they go to the show and they see the show with different eyes.
What other experiences that we have we not covered as far as art advice, as far as the exchanges that you've had with some folks? I feel like there's more to get to in terms of some of those interactions.
Well, I have the list in front of me here. And so we have them in categories. So we have there are pro tips. So some people just want to know how to photograph their artwork or how to write an artist statement. Also how to respond to call for entries.
Mm-hmm.
So just real basic things. Some people, they just need to know how to navigate that. And then we have stuff like basic information about art appreciation. And then I was talking about some people just need permission. So we've made artistic licenses. And so sometimes when we hear somebody that's sitting in front of us and kind of I just don't even know how to begin. And, you hear it, what they're saying. And so we, sometimes we'll pull that out and issue them an artistic license. And then we've also have lots of motivation and inspiration stuff. So I think there's a really great thing from Ira Glass that we have a handout on about I wish somebody would have told me these things. And sometimes it's just that, we're just trying to throw a bunch of noodles against a wall. And I think some of these things stick and people really take them to heart. So, the Sister Creta Kent rules/John Cage rules about being creative. And then we also have stuff that's more specific to Sacramento, where we have all of the, the visual arts organizations here in Sacramento. It is an amassed collection of pretty much everything that we know about. And I'd say it's over 200 or 300. There's a lot there of different types of organizations that people can, approach and get into. We're just trying to get people connected to people so they don't feel alone. And so they know that when they get rejected, that they're not alone. This is part of the process, and that everybody goes through it. And I think that's part of it too, is just not feeling alone.
You said 300 organizations?
Maybe that's a little exaggerated. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I remember it being Joya, do you remember off the top of your head? It was maybe 200.
It's a two-sided paper, and then
yeah.
I only put the visual arts organizations that are more stable because there's a lot of things that come and go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
and
true.
That list has to be kind of updated constantly. But then we have our knowledge of other organizations that aren't on the list. So basically, when we hand someone the list, it's not just here's a phone book. It's I'll highlight talking to you, I think you should approach these places.
Right.
That's probably going to be the appropriate place for you to start instead of heading off to this professional gallery and you're just out of high school. So, it's, and also as people who have run an artist space before, it's a pain in the ass. Now I understand why sometimes gallerists are so, get out of my, don't bring your portfolio and put it on my counter. Gross. Get out of here. So I understand both sides of it. It's a waste of time if it's not what you're, space is trying to accomplish, So I think that we do, I really do, we do try to make it around to all the spaces in town and figure out what's going on and keep an ear to the ground. And in the newspaper or local listings or the SAC 365 listing, there are literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of art spaces, but that's because half of them are hair salons and coffee shops and lawyer offices that lend their lobby or whatever, so people need to cut through, even just one handout I haven't made yet that might sound ridiculous to some people, but just explaining what is the difference between a gallery, a museum, an artist run space, a commercial gallery, they have no idea.
Right.
And I even think some of the people that are listing themselves as a gallery have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's true.
So when you guys want to break from being educators on the side of being educators, you know, educating people who it sounds like predominantly need some of the more of the basics in terms of, you know, what steps they should take, what question, answering their various questions about the next steps and so on. Do you feel like you can go to more peers, you know, other than each of you at will?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
I just get out of town. I just get out of town and go see some stuff.
No, I meant like have conversations with your peers. Or, you know, or do you maybe get together, if not with the two of you, you know, with one of your other artist peers and go into San Francisco or something like that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went to, we took a couple people to, what was it, the art fair in San Jose. Was it Joya?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we get out of town.
I mean, we go on field trips pretty often too. And like, that's just, mm-hmm. you know, that's just cheap. It saves on gas and stuff to take. I mean, you're with 60 kids, but you just set them free. And when I say kids, again, it's 18 to 80 year olds. So you just let them go and then you have a good day at the museum. And then, you know, you don't have to pay for parking and it's
right.
great. I found like, I was telling Yana last night, like there's so many, like the longer you hang around and if you get your head out of your ass and you don't just talk to your friends, but you start looking at like who's been at this for a long time around here, you know, you can see that other people have been trying to make things happen here for a long time and you find those people. And I mean, it's like passing an invisible baton, you know what I mean? Like they just kind of shrugged it off at some point, someone else is going to pick up that problem. And so you realize, you know, you see these old people hanging out at openings and they're at every opening and they're kind of cooler than the regular old people. And you think like, what's up with them? And then you realize like, oh, they ran a gallery in the '70s or, mm-hmm. you know, there's this one little lady that I see at every opening and also at a lot of community meetings named Misako. And she was like a beat poet in the '60s and of some import.
Yeah.
And you know, now she's just like the lady with the clipboard and the petitions. And that's great. You know, that's where, I'm a future old lady with a clipboard, you know, mm-hmm. for sure. So,
do you get her and people like her to your studio?
I just find her in the community, in the world. I just see her out there, you
right.
know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I just think it's a long history of people trying to make things happen, and you can keep trying this. And some people stay with it in the trying to make things happen category for longer than others. But mm-hmm. Somebody's got to do the work. You know, somebody has to do this mm-hmm. work. And it's a little self-serving. I feel like also like the imbalances and the injustices in the whole world, but definitely in the art world, you know, it pisses me off. And somebody asked me recently, like, do you know any women artists of color in Sacramento that are established? And the list is pretty short, but like Sacramento is not short on people of color. So what's up? And I've been trying to crack that nut for a long time. Like art scenes tend to be sort of white and you try to make a space as accessible as possible. And you think you've done all the right things. And then you're still not getting that community makeup that you want. But I'm at a community college where I see that. And so I think that the art advice booth, putting it out on the sidewalk and talking to anyone that comes up to you, it just feels like a way to kind of start to write the tied on that, like, mm-hmm. you know, it's one of the friendliest, most approachable, most accessible ways that we can talk to people about art that I've been able to come up with. And that's gratifying to me to be able to try to figure out a way to do that.
You mentioned earlier, much earlier in the conversation, you know, that you're occasionally are selling some of your work. Are you selling it? And I think you mentioned this in our earlier conversation that sometimes it's a matter of people liking you and your, you know, your personality, your persona and so on, that it's as much about that to get people to buy your work. But all that to say, who are the types of buyers that we're talking about?
Well, for me, this is Yana. Private commissions, I've been doing some stuff like that. And then that commission, somebody went to their house and saw the work and then came to my studio to buy more work. So most of my stuff that I sell is just through individuals. It's not through a gallery. It's not online. It's just people that are interested. They saw the image of the work and they wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
So usually they don't know me per se, but they have seen my work. So I'm kind of just like the opposite of Joya, I guess.
How so, Joya?
Well, I do a lot of, lately, like the last 5-10 years, I've been doing a lot of projects.
Mm-hmm.
And so there isn't anything to buy. I mean, I'm giving it away, or I've been paid for it through a grant, or I've raised money for it. So, you know, I think they just want a piece of that. They want to show support for what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I sell kind of residue or swag related to a project to fund something or, and then I think that when I finally do occasionally have a little painting show or an art show, then, you know, then it's like a rare occurrence, and then they want it because I don't know why they want it. I don't, you know, I think
because it's awesome.
Because you're a genius.
Well, you know, I mean, sometimes it's like hard to work. Sometimes I have a tendency to make things that might not be easy to live with or easy to maintain, or they're just not sure. It's not easy. It's not usually like a painting that you just hang on a wall.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
right.
It takes me a while to find a home for it. Or like I just made all these weird tissue paper sort of stained glass window banner things. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how archival they are. I made them for an event and I like them. And people want to buy them, but I'm not sure how to price them because I don't know how they're going to look in a year or two. So right now they're just kind of hanging in my studio so I can see how they age so that I know what price point, because I don't want to, you know, if they're going to look good for 10 years or more, then I'm willing to put a good price on them. If they're going to look crappy in 3 months, then you can have them for $50 and get them out of here, you know?
Right.
So
speaking of grants, you mentioned grants a couple minutes ago. To what extent is Art Advice receiving grant money?
Well,
go ahead, Joya. Go on.
There's one little special grant that we got for $5,000, and we've already used it pretty much.
Right. Okay.
Paying artists to give advice.
Yeah. Are there other grants that you're applying to now?
Not this week.
No.
We'll see.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Stuff online. The call for entries, there's cafe. There are always things that come past me, but like, I just don't have the bandwidth right now to do any of that stuff either. So
sure, right.
It's always like on the back of my mind, like, ooh, I should do this, I should do that. But then it comes and goes. So those are always around too.
Do you ever feel like
this was a special opportunity because it was a creative economy grant put out by the city of Sacramento. So I knew we'd probably get a good chance of getting it. So I was motivated.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like, though, that you should be, or could at least be asking for modest donations from the community, from the people who take advantage of your services?
We could. That sounds like another job.
Yeah.
Well, you put a tip jar on your desk.
It says 5 cents on the can.
What's that?
But people put in... We have a little can on the Art Advice counter that says 5 cents in keeping with the cartoon, but people put $10 in there, $20 in there.
Okay.
I mean, they do value our advice.
Right. Good, good. Okay. That's all I was asking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. We just buy beer and tacos with it.
That's all your money takes you, beer and tacos? Okay. Well, that's not nothing. So,
it's not. It's something.
Yeah, it's something. So Jennifer Lugris, your neighbor and fellow artist community member, suggested that she anticipates that Sacramento will grow into more of an art hub, primarily with exodus from the Bay Area. Have you already seen that happening, and do you anticipate that as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's something that we're feeling. Definitely, the price of real estate has shot up in this area. And just sitting at Art Advice, I think we've come across at least a handful of people, artists, who say, hey, I'm new in town. Like, how do I get, you know, what do I do and where do I go and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. several people we've talked to already. Yeah, it's happening.
That's exciting to meet new people right away and be able to help them navigate this, just so they don't have to mess around with the wrong, you know, information. That mm-hmm. that helps.
Yeah.
And I think there's mm-hmm. there's a weird shifting. Like, there's also people leaving here and going to LA lately. And so, you mm-hmm. know, there's like a shifting. I know that, like, I left Oakland and it got cool. I left Brooklyn and then it got cool. So I feel like, okay, I'm just going to stay put until
right.
this place gets cool. Like,
yeah.
I'm sick of leaving right when it's, as soon as I leave, it gets better. So, I have been hanging out here for 18 years. And so, I'm ready for, you know,
right.
and it has definitely improved since I got here. And I feel like I'm in a good position to stay fit and stay put and, ream the benefits of not being antsy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with...
I just wanted to mention that,
sure.
like, what Jennifer was saying, like, yeah, I think, like, there are a lot of people that are coming here, like artists and stuff, but the collectors, like, that's the thing that's really kind of lacking here are art patrons. We don't really have a deep pocket here in Sacramento or deep pockets. And so, you know, like, when the artists do make money, it's either because other artists are collecting their art or trading, or, you know, you sell something for a couple $1,000s, but not, you know, they're just anything over $5,000. It's just, it's really hard to sell anything past that here.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm finding. So I don't know about, like, I'm concerned. Like, we've got really great artists here. We have a lot of medium sized fish in a very small pond. And
right.
I'm not quite sure, like, how the art patrons are going to respond to that. It seems like a lot of people that are from the Bay Area who are part of the .com, that, you know, they're like younger people that are spending their money on virtual weapons or other modes of entertainment versus collecting art. So I think we need to really work on that here too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm optimistic though in other ways, because all of these people, even if we're just getting the artist people, like the people that were priced out, they all have, in terms of the artists, like, they have connections and communities that extend from each of them that we can all mutually benefit from, you know? So
sure.
I think that could be kind of exciting, because sometimes this place can get a little provincial, you know, and I want to encourage the artists in this community to not be so wary of, like, ooh, there's new people coming in infiltrating from another place. Like, I'm a fucking infiltrator. I came here from another place and look what I've done for
mm-hmm.
this town. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, don't be afraid. Like, maybe they're going to be good. Maybe they'll be friendly. Maybe they'll be
mm-hmm.
useful. And maybe
yeah.
they'll buy your work or give you a show. So don't be afraid.
Yeah. I mean, Jennifer is definitely like that. She's already been welcomed into the arts community, and she's thriving. She's, oh my gosh, that girl.
She's doing great.
You know, she's got like
yeah.
three shows right now.
There yeah. you go, Jennifer. There's your plug. I told you I'd give you one. So... What do you say to the person who's left the Bay Area, who's, you know, I'm new in town, like you said earlier? What are the things that you tell them to do? Like, give me like five things that you tell them they need to do.
Well, I'd say second Saturday
mm-hmm.
would be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Doya?
Go to Verge Center for the Arts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just get on their mailing list.
Crocker Art Museum.
That's right.
That's our staple one art museum in town.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to those places, but then more nitty gritty, you know, what else would
Ooh.
You say in terms of connecting with people? Like get on that Young Contemporaries thing that you guys met on or something like that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Red Museum.
Okay. What's that?
It's like a
music venue space.
Okay, got
but
it.
it's very young and gritty, and they do art shows, and it's just the energy there is really wonderful.
Great,
mm-hmm.
great. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I'd say go talk to those ladies at Art Advice. They'll hook you up with the information.
Well, that's a feedback loop, because they're already talking to you at that point, presumably. Well, do you guys feel like we've covered you know, the bulk of it. Is there anything that you would be remiss in, you know, a half hour from now that we didn't mention, if we don't mention it?
I think that it's like the environmental adage of like, think globally, act locally.
Mm.
And I think that people in secondary cities or tertiary cities,
mm-hmm.
We can do that too. And I was telling Niana, and I don't know if this is like election blues or what, but like, you know, Obama said something about like creating a more perfect union. And I feel like, yeah, the art world's not perfect the way it is, but we don't have to, it doesn't have to be that way. We can make it better. And it starts one little shovel full at a time. And, you know, if we can start, I mean, wouldn't it be cool if this became a town where like, wow, it's a middle-class place that doesn't have a lot of money, but the populace sure is well-informed. Wouldn't that be,
yeah.
Isn't that like a possibility? Like, seems like,
yeah. You know, and
there's moments,
yeah.
where it just took like one patron opening a library or, you know, putting money into a little art center. And there's some little town that has this amazing art center that there's crazy classes and, you know,
mm-hmm.
just takes a little effort.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Charlie Brown Christmas tree. You know, we're just like decorating our sad little Christmas tree over here.
Right.
And everyone should get into that.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, there has been talk of you know, one of the last meetings I went to with some artists, like a brunch, they did mention Meow Wolf. Like they were talking about that. And, you know, at that point we didn't really know very much about it. And so we kind of looked into it and stuff. And I mean, that's such a wonderful idea. And I'm just so happy that they have something like that. I don't know how feasible something like that is here because of, we just don't have, like I said, we don't have those deep pockets. But man, that would be awesome. We've had similar things. We've had like art hotel, we've done Art Street, and I think on the to-do list is Art City, but it just takes a really long time for things to really get going here in Sacramento. It's pretty bureaucratic by its very nature. And it does happen. It just takes a long time. And, you know, I think both of us are really in it for the long haul too. So
yeah.
It's just been interesting to watch it. There's progress, but it's slow.
Right.
And that's also why we made the booth, because the bureaucracy is just to kill you thinking of like, oh
yeah.
my God, another panel, another collection of data. I can't do
yeah.
it. I can tell you where to
yeah.
go and why it's not working. So making the booth was just like instant gratification. Like I'm making it better
mm-hmm.
right now. I'm starting right now, right
yeah.
here on this corner. I'm going to start making it better. So,
thank you so much to Iana and Joya. Iana actually had to jump off the phone to go teach a class shortly after that moment. So thanks very much again to both of them and to their Sacramento artist peer, Jennifer Lugris, who you may have heard of before, for connecting us. Before we get to the price of everything via that Weiss link that I mentioned in a brief remembrance of the late Robert Morris, again, big thanks to you guys for all the feedback from episode 231, that price of everything episode with the producers, Debbie Wish and Jennifer Bly Stockman. I love hearing from you guys, especially in good size quantities. And thanks for the few donations directly on the heels of that episode from a few of you. One each from listeners in the South, the Midwest, Texas, and one from Brooklyn. And that's artist Madeline Hines. Thanks again to all of you so much. Please support the show in any way that you can. As I mentioned earlier, I will be making this new bonus episode with Iana and Joya, with the emphasis on Joya's figure modeling career, available to past supporters of the podcast as well as new ones. So if you donate $30 or more to the show via PayPal, Venmo, Patreon, or good old-fashioned check, you will receive this new bonus episode plus the past 6 bonus episodes and a podcast bumper sticker if you'd like one. So thank you in advance for your support. It really does help keep this show going. All right, so if you haven't had a chance to see The Price of Everything, the documentary about the art world, particularly art and money, please do. But if you have not, it will not keep you from being able to follow along to what's coming next. So this is from Kenny Schachter, the dealer, curator, collector, and writer. And it's called What the Price of Everything Gets Wrong About the Erotic Relationship Between Money and Art. And that is from ArtNet. And this is just an excerpt because it's, as it sounds like, a pretty long piece. This excerpt is not short, but I think it's going to give you a great taste of his writing and his take on the piece. And so just to give you a little setup, he's contextualizing the explosion of the art market in various phases over time. And so as we jump in, he's talking about the events of 2001. Now jump ahead to September 11, 2001, as the world recoiled after the World Trade Center attack. Fundamental shifts took place in the mindset of the public, including the biggest players in the collecting universe. A hypercharged focus on the interconnectedness of global politics and the inescapable relevance of current events coincided with an inward turn to family and the home in the face of unprecedented uncertainty, instability, and vulnerability. It was a new world, and as a result, attention shifted dramatically to the new. I have a friend, a former major success story in the antiques trade. From one day to the next, his business evaporated. To this day, there's no recovery in sight. In the process, tastes were radically refashioned and values for contemporary art steadily increased, and not just because classic, older stock was drying up. The art market has now expanded more in the past 50 years than it had in the previous 500. Younger people respond more to their contemporaries in every corner of life, and as wealth gets passed from generation to generation like a baton in a relay race, resources have been increasingly funneled to the here and now, at the same moment as artists have been elevated to the status of high-flying hybrid entertainer-designer wealth generators. The democratizing forces of the internet have only fueled the exodus to contemporary. But back to the price of everything, I didn't forget. There have been many reviews to date, and I don't want to dwell on the details, especially the negatives, of which there are plenty. So here's a smattering of observations on both sides. I like and admire Amy Capilozzo. She's bright and has become rich from her own druthers, and that's admirable, so hats off. But at times, in the film, she comes off sounding like a car crash between The Sopranos and Curtis James Jackson III, known professionally as 50 Cent. Like when she uses the word hundo to refer to 100 million, a bit of a slang I had to confirm with my kids. She also remarked that good art makes itself known regardless of value, even to lay audiences, and I wholeheartedly concur. Another collector, and that's in quotes, blabs about being a rich person on Park Avenue, writing journalism and novels about incredibly insecure and neurotic rich people living on Park Avenue. Fascinating. She's an avowed art lover who has some free money to spend at auction from having sold off some other art she previously, allegedly, cared for, also at auction. Can't add much more to that. A titan of art at 86 years old, Gerhard Richter is hard to criticize, but it's also hard to take when he snarls that, quote, it's not good when this, unquote, pointing to his latest squeegee painting, is the value of a house. He follows this fit of pique with a comment that only a casually privileged person in a position of great wealth could make. Money is dirty. Gerhard, I have a few questions, if I may. Why shouldn't a painting sell for the value of a house if it's good? And if you don't like foisting such an onerous choice on prospective homeowners, then why not lower your prices? Is Marion Goodman that much of a bully? A threat? That brings me to Jeff Koons. I wish he wouldn't, but whenever he speaks about his art, as he does all too often, I have utterly no clue what he's trying to say. The self-helpy, pseudo-self-actualized blather is enough to make me convulse. But in one of his many appearances in the film, I could finally understand what he was getting at when he began imitating the sounds of his proposed $50 million steam engine sculpture, puffing and tooting and woo-woo-wooing in a way that unsurprisingly bordered on the disturbing. His assistants must have been bewildered, and it's worth sitting through the 1 hour and 38 minutes of the documentary just for that. I know. I watched it twice. One last point in the realm of the negative. The advisor, lecturer, DJ, artist, and, of course, world-famous auctioneer, Simone Dupuri, who I count as a friend, we're of the same ilk if only for our shared overabundance of job descriptions, said something that made my skin crawl. With all due respect, that, quote, it's important for good art to be expensive because you only care and protect things with a high value, unquote. If that woefully misguided notion were ever to have taken hold, which it hasn't, we'd be left with nothing more than the market art of the moment. No thanks. So that is, again, an excerpt from the ArtNet piece by Kenny Schachter. Go check it out if you dare. All right, finally, before we go, I wanted to briefly give you, I'm not, as you can probably imagine, a big eulogy guy, a big, you know, celebrating those who have passed guy, but I did have Robert Morris as a teacher. My very first semester, actually, at Hunter College, I took theory and criticism. Of course, I wanted to take a class with Robert Morris. He didn't actually happen to be teaching any studio classes at the time, I believe. He might have been teaching sculpture, but I was not a sculpture major. So he was teaching this theory and crit class, and I signed up, and there we were. Second class of the semester, so week two. He's got a chalkboard filled with various subjects, structuralism and minimalism, post-structuralism and various French post-structuralists, two of which I can recall as being Derrida and a couple of other people. And then there was one that was Baudrillard, Lyotard, and Lacan. Now, here's the deal. He basically said, okay, everybody, pick. This is going to be your topic for your research paper, which you're going to present at the end of the class, and it's going to be your only grade. So there we were, quickly having to choose. And another guy beat me to the other post-structuralists. For some reason, I was drawn to that one. I don't know why. I think that was ultimately a good thing. Oh, it was Derrida, Foucault, and one other person. And I ended up with Baudrillard, Lyotard, and Lacan. And meanwhile, one unlucky fellow student wound up with structuralism and minimalism, which meant that she was going to be writing about minimalism, something that Robert Morris was a part of, you know, was one of the main figures of. And cut to her presentation towards the end of class. Mine, by the way, went pretty well, I have to say. You know, big sigh of relief. Hers, meanwhile, and I think she went prior to me, she did it. She basically, people just read their papers. There was very little in the way of sort of fancy presentations. He eviscerated her almost immediately. He has a very sort of deadpan and kind of monotone-ish type of tone, so it's not anything like he yells at people. But the words he used to describe how disappointed he was with her piece, you know, again, she was taking on something that he was deeply involved with, really what sort of left the room in silence. And you have to feel bad for her. I don't really have any other profound moments to add, I'm afraid, other than I can tell you from having spoken with classmates who had him in studio classes or crit classes that he was equally cutting. And there was one move where he basically said to a student, "That's it," and then he walked out of the room. So anyway, those are some memories that I have of Robert Morris. If you are not familiar with Robert Morris, in addition to being one of the original minimalists, you know, along with Donald Judd, Dan Flavin et al., he went on to do quite a wide variety of works, including these sort of pseudo-Holocaust skull-based elaborate sculpture painting sort of pieces that I would recommend checking out. He also did performances and so on. And I got to set foot in his loft on Green Street because one of his pet students, basically a student who was close enough to him for him to let this guy stay in his place. He was, I guess, already starting to spend a lot of time upstate. Did a recording for me. I was doing some kind of voiceover type thing. Yes, even before I had any clue that I would do a podcast. And we recorded it there. And it was just this immense open loft with hardly anything in it, and a loft above where there was a bed, basically, in a little kitchen. It was pretty much that type of deal. All right. That's enough remembrances for this episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you for your support. And I look forward to your comments on this episode. And I will talk to you in a couple weeks. Ciao for now.